Shogger, how are you? Was it? What did you think of the ending last night?
The mess up.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's just an absolute nightmare. It's not like that happened with, you know, best original score in an animated film. I mean, they botched the one you don't ever want to botch. And they botched it badly. So it was an absolute tire fire. But the guys that were up there handled it with as much dignity and class as they could, and it was very uncomfortable. But it was an absolute tire fire, and the company that's in charge of all of those things is now going to be greatly scrutinized for a long time. Big mistake. No good. And unfortunately, Justin Timberlake had already played and didn't have the opportunity to come back on and just make everything better for everybody.
I wondered if Warren Beatty went, because, you know, he explained what he saw and he goes, well, the card I had said Emma Stone. If he just would have said, oh, excuse me, we have the wrong card. That would have been glorious.
Yes, I know. It was painful. It was, yeah, it was just cringeworthy, painful, just, yeah. And then, you know, everybody handled it the best they could, but there's no way to describe that other than just an absolute tire fire happening on stage. It was terrible. So, yeah, it'll be talked about for a long time. I mean, remember, what did Steve Harvey do? Didn't he, like, call the wrong Miss Universe or something winner? Or?
Yeah, he had the runner-up and the winner mistake.
Yeah, like, times that by about 100 on this stage for that award to get messed up on this stage. That's just... just incredible that that happened. And, you know, whatever, it is what it is. It was entertaining to watch. It's not real life anyways. That's all pretend land.
Yeah, well, exactly. Let's get to the Mike Commodore has Oiler fans in a tizzy.
No, I'm not up to speed on this. What is Commie up to?
He is hilarious all the time. His pack my you know what hashtag is rather comical, but mm-hmm. He has it. Sources have told him that there have been good dialogue regarding Ebley with the Islanders, which could be, I don't discount that for a sec. Good dialogue and an actual trade are two different things, right? But you know, the Islanders and Jordan Eberle, do you think it's possible a deal like that gets made before the deadline?
Well, that's a pretty legit hockey trade if something like that actually happens. And did he talk about return at all? Like, what are we looking at here? What are we discussing?
No, he's too smart for that. He just mentions that there's been good dialogue.
Oh, good dialogue.
Yeah,
okay.
Good dialogue, and you know, and leaves the speculation up to everyone else.
Yeah, for everybody else to run in circles trying to figure out exactly what he's talking about. Well, I mean, listen, would the Oilers be willing to give up Jordan Eberle for what? That's kind of my question, because as you know, they are very, very thin on the right side. So the minute they trade for Jordan Eberle, they're kind of looking for him.
Yeah, fair enough.
To fill a spot in their lineup. Now, they've got Puljujarvi, who's developing, who eventually will be the premier, has a chance to be the premier right winger on this team, but... Jordan Eberle, I think I would be interested for them to carry Jordan Eberle on their roster into a playoff and give him an opportunity in playoff hockey to see what he can do. And that if you look at Jordan's numbers over the course of his career, what it's looking like is happening is he's just having an awful year. And this happens to good players sometimes. It's not just a bad streak, not just a bad few months. Literally having an awful year. So do you throw him overboard? Well, they just traded Taylor Hall, and skill is not easy to come by. You can't throw too much of it overboard without bringing some of it back in. So I think they legitimately have questions as to whether or not they can win with Jordan Eberle playing a premier offensive role, but they've got a great opportunity coming up here as they likely head to the playoffs to find out. And I don't know that it's smart to trade him before you do find out.
Yeah, thinking that is this just a one-off to be this bad, or is this how he's going to look on a competitive team?
Yeah, and that is a totally fair question / criticism. And I don't know what the answer is. I honestly don't. I thought I saw him competing harder. I saw him throwing body checks, playing with intensity, driving the net, challenging defensemen, doing all of the things that make him a well above average player and a guy who can compete. So when you see that in his game, you go, yep, this guy can do it. This guy can do it. They just need to figure out how to more consistently get it out of him. He needs to figure out how to put it forward more consistently. So it all depends on the return. I mean, if Peter Chiarelli sees a return that makes sense, then, you know, obviously you go ahead and do it. And maybe they look at their right side as Draisaitl 1 in the, heading into the playoffs, Puljujarvi 2 heading into the playoffs, and then you've got a mix of the other guys filling in the 3 and 4 spots. Maybe that's how, literally how they're looking at it. But you're one injury away from, man, they do not have a lot of depth on that right side.
No, definitely not, which is why people think Strom would be one. But the deals, Brian Boyle, they're out of, Martin Hansel, they're out of. So do you see any other centers?
Well, but people know that Ryan Strom has 11 goals this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so why is that an answer?
Hey, I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying that's what, hey, when people get mad at a player, Ryan, you can't rationalize with them. They're like, Everly's terrible. He makes $6 million, so I want to replace him with a less player who doesn't make $6
million. Right. So, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, Oiler fans are frustrated at Jordan Everly because they watch him every game and they see his shortcomings. But Islander fans watch Ryan Strome every game, and they see that, you know, through 58 games, he's put the puck in 11 times. It's just the way it goes when you're watching a team every single night. You pick the players apart, and you just absolutely beat the crap out of them, and you think nobody's worth anything, and you want to boot them out of town. Now, Everly's had a bad year. There's no question. I've been very critical of Jordan Everly through this year. But you don't just throw skill like that away. You don't just take another significant downgrade in skill in your lineup without having to think long and hard about it. Now, when they traded for Adam Larson, they took a significant downgrade in the skill level in their lineup. They looked at Puljujarvi coming and thought they would be able to do it. Draisaitl, McDavid, that they had enough. But you can only do that so many times. And then all of a sudden, you're looking for skill. So they need to be careful about throwing Jordan Everly out because he's had a bad year, and they're not sure if they can win with him. Well, he seems to be getting his game together in little bits here and there, and I would be interested to see what they can get from Everly in the playoffs. Now, if all of a sudden there's a ridiculous return sitting in front of them that's a no-brainer, that shores them up, then, of course, you have to make a good trade if it's there. But I wouldn't throw Jordan Everly away and say he just has to go.
Yeah, I would agree with you. But other centers now you think are potential teams to look at now that we know for sure Boyle and Hansel are out of the equation?
It's a pretty thin list, bud. Like, totally honest. It's a really, really thin list, and it's almost non-existent. I mean, and I think they're probably staring at the same list that we've been poring over and kind of realizing that that's the case. Now, unrestricted free agent rentals is the specifics of what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Maybe there is a hockey deal to be made out there. So in other words, if the Edmonton Oilers are willing to package a third round pick in Brandon Davidson, how good a third line center could they bring back for something like that? I don't know what the answer is. I'm not on those phone calls. And I think there's possibility that they could look at their depth on the blue line and think maybe they'll lose Davidson anyways. And for what they need right now, it makes more sense to have that player as a third line center, that roster position. So maybe they do move a defenseman in a hockey deal. But as far as the rental market, it's really thin. And you know, Mark Letestu, what does he have, 7 power play goals? Something like that. I think he has, I think, like 6 or 7 of his 11 or 12 goals are on the power play. So it skews, like, you look at him and think, well, maybe he could be that third line center. Those are good numbers, you know, 50%+ in the faceoff circle, right shot, a dozen goals. That's a third liner. But they need a third line center 5-on-5. They don't have a third line center 5-on-5. Letestu's a 4 in 5-on-5 play. So they need to go find that number 3 guy. And quite frankly, as I peruse the list, the same list that you do, I don't really see it. I don't really see it.
What's interesting is Mark Letestu has 14 even strength assists. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has 13.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it. Nugent's had a, like his season is.
But all of his goals are on the most of his goals are on the power play, right? Letestu's.
Yeah, Letestu. Yeah, his goals are. He's got more power. Yeah, because he's a shooter there, right? But he only has two power play assists, right? Where Nugent-Hopkins has. As four, so I just thought.
So, do you think they would be okay going with him as a third line center, playing him as sort of saying, well, there isn't any third line centers to be had, so elevate Letestu, and maybe they go get themselves a fourth line center instead, and not have to use Kara or Kudula in the four spot.
They could do that, or they could get a right winger, Patrick Sharp or somebody else like that, and move Leon Draisaitl back to center.
But again, they don't want to move Draisaitl back to center. They don't. I mean, they want to, but I don't believe they think they can. Now, maybe if they change the equation a little bit and put a player in there that can compete a little better, maybe if Puljujärvi comes back up towards the end of the year and looks like he's going to be able to contribute, sure, you have different options and a different look. But I think they're looking at their hand and going, okay, this is what it is. Draisaitl needs to be next to McDavid for us to have a chance to beat the better teams every night. So what does the rest of the lineup look like, and what do they need to be better? And I mean, but I just don't see that third line center that moves the dial for them coming in unrestricted, at least not anybody that's legitimately having a chance to be available. I mean, you know, we've talked about Derek Ryan, and he's got 8 goals. He's really, really good in the faceoff circle. Last night, once again, accentuates how brutal they are in the faceoff circle and how heading into the playoffs that way is not going to be a good idea. But you know who the next worst team is? You know who's 29th? The Pittsburgh Penguins. So how much do you have to worry about that and whether you're going to win or lose a playoff series based on faceoffs? But they do need to get better. So any center they're bringing in, that has to be a prerequisite. The guy can win big draws. So Ryan is good in the faceoff circle. He's got 8 goals. I haven't checked. I don't know how many of those are at even strength at this point in time. But 8 goals in 43 games and 57% in the faceoff circle, that's pushing that third line center range, and maybe 5-on-5 would be an upgrade on Letestu.
Yeah, he's got 5 even strength goals, same as Letestu, right? They each have 5. Letestu just has more power play goals than Derek Ryan at this point. And I know Derek Ryan. Hey, it's been there's no debate. It's been a kind of a great feel good story for him. No doubt about it.
I don't care about the story. I mean, I don't.
Like,
does the
I look
fit
at,
or not?
I also look at the amount of faceoffs taken, right? Because you're a guy like they've got you know, Jordan Staal takes a ton of faceoffs.
Yeah.
For that team, even Victor Rask takes more. Derek Ryan has taken the third most draws on their team, 400 and well, actually, sorry, he's taken the fourth most faceoffs on their team, which I find interesting. So, I don't know. Can he play the role that you want? Because winning faceoffs is that brief 1 second of play. Then how's this play away from the puck or defensively? That to me would be the bigger question.
Right. And I can't pretend to know everything about this player. We see him play a couple times a year, if that, but I have spoken to some people that see him play. I think the foot speed is a little bit of an issue with him, which I think isn't great. So he's not very big and not very fast, but he wins faceoffs and can score a little bit for them. But that's the kind of market that they're perusing right now. Like in terms of the rental market for what fills their need. I mean, we've just seen Boyle go. We've just seen Hanzel go. White goes. I mean, these players are all moving. And frankly, I don't think the Oilers were necessarily in on any of them. I think that the fact that they don't have a second round pick to trade this year, which means they're going to want to hang on to their first. They've got 2/3. This no second round pick has really hamstrung them, because if you have a first, you feel okay moving your second. If you have a second, you feel okay moving your first. But without that second, it's tough to be. And look at what is always involved in these deals. Quite often, it's a second round pick, especially for the caliber of player they're looking for. So, yeah, they're in a tough spot, and I think unless a hockey deal comes along, and maybe the rental market is so bad, that's where they're focused, more on a hockey-type deal, and then that's player going out, player coming back in. And so what would make sense? Well, they've got an extra NHL-caliber defenseman, if not two, and so maybe they can deal from a position of strength there.
Yeah, and the other thing you mentioned that was interesting to me, was about, Derek Ryan. And if foot speed's an issue there, well, to me, then that's a non-starter. The orders need to get quicker more than anything. Because, they have Anton Lanner, who can win 56% of his faceoffs and doesn't have good foot speed, right?
But he doesn't have eight goals either.
Yeah, no, sure. And they even have a guy like Matt Hendricks, who's only played 33 games, who wins over 58% of his faceoffs, but,
right,
you know, is a winger. So I'd like, if they're going to get a center, to me, I'd rather them get a center who can play third line and win faceoffs. If not, I'd rather them focus on a right winger.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe they will. I don't get the sense that they're super focused on wingers. But I could be wrong with that. We'll have to wait and see, and whether it's, I mean, but even like the price on these guys, on the price on Aginla, the price on Sharp, the price on these types of players that you're talking about, I'm not sure that Peter Chiarelli's going to be, if it's going to stay high, like what do you think Patrick Sharp ends up going for? I mean, a player with his experience, what do you think the price, I mean, I guarantee you that they're asking for at least a second round pick for him, and the Oilers don't have that to give.
No, they don't.
I don't think a couple of thirds gets it done. So what do they have to give that makes sense for that team, who they don't want to take on a contract that they just have to protect, right? They're looking for picks. So I'm not sure how executable it is. Well, now you get into the third and fourth round picks. Well, now the player you're bringing in isn't good enough. So, and the Oilers don't have a lot of prospects. They don't have a lot of guys that teams are, give me that guy.
That's their biggest weakness right now, organizational depth, which is, to me, you can wait till closer to the deadline, and I know some people think the prices go higher. I'm not necessarily sure. I think the prices are higher farther away, and as you get closer, teams now get desperate. Right? Well, I'd rather get something here. It's an hour to go rather than get nothing.
I would agree with that, but here's the question. I mean, how great is the need, right? So if you're the Minnesota Wild, I mean, has there ever been another season where it's so obvious the Minnesota Wild need to load up and go for it, right,
yeah,
this season? It's just clear as day. Then you look at the unrestricted free agent market, the rental market, and they think, okay, well, what helps us? And there's not very much. So what do? They pay up pretty good price and just go get it done ahead of time to guarantee that they have a chair, that they're not left standing when the music stops, that they don't blow it in the year where they need to go for it. And so they pull the trigger early. I'm not surprised in the slightest that they went out and did that. This is the year they have to, and it's a really thin market for rentals. So they went out and got not one, but a couple guys. So will the prices go down as the deadline gets closer? Maybe. But also, the market's not great, so you might not. There might be pretty slim pickings by then. You get a half-price buffet because it's 3 hours old, right?
Yeah. It's very true. Schauger, we will see what happens tomorrow. We'll talk Oilers taking on the Blues.
Sounds good, buddy. Take care.
Ryan Rashog from TSN.